Hey, folks, welcome to the Four Down Podcast. I am Andrew McNeil. With me, as always, is Graydon Gordian. We are here tonight to talk about basketball. Our guest tonight, coming on soon, is Andrew Monaco from Fox Southwest. You know him as the Spurs sideline reporter and, I guess, number two play-by-play guy, I guess. I don't know if there's a depth chart for like, play-by-play guys, but he does a few games a year. He did a lot on the Rodeo Roadtrip with Danny Ferry. So he's going to join us a little while. He is currently in Dallas, in Frisco, Texas, covering the D-League game up there, the Legends, and I assume the Toros, but I don't know for sure. I didn't really look at the schedule or anything like that, but he's going to join us shortly. So right now we're just going to talk about basketball because last night was the Spurs loss to the Bulls, and a Derrick Rose guy. I mean, I guess he's pretty good. He got an MVP already, so usually that's a good sign, but man... There was a few plays last night. I remember there was one where I was sitting there and I just, it was in the third quarter, I believe, and he just like cut through the lane and I think one of the really underrated things, he has such quick hands and he makes like three fakes before anyone on the defense realizes where they should initially put their hands to try and defend his shot. And there was one play where it didn't even matter if he made the shot. He was halfway through his move, and I just yelled out loud, "Wow!" from the press row, and then he still made the shot. And I think he got fouled on it too. He's really good.
He's a fantastic player. I mean, he's so fast, and I think that what he creates. I mean, he strikes me as a guy who, in some sense, he creates a problem for the Spurs. Which is that I think that our defense is designed to contain pass-first point guards.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that in some sense the defensive system was designed with the Steve Nashes and Chris Pauls of the league. In
mind. Yeah.
So when you end up playing,
the Spurs usually do well against too.
Who they do well against? Who oftentimes people will note, and I think what they'll falsely note is they'll say, oh, Nash had a really good game against the Spurs, or Paul had a really good game against the Spurs. And what they'll mean by that is they scored a lot of points.
Yeah.
But that is, in some sense, on purpose, right? What, mm-hmm. what it was is that those players are less effective when they're being forced to score themselves rather than when they're orchestrating the whole offense. And
yeah.
in some sense, a player like Rose, I think, flips that approach on his head because –
Yeah, the Spurs would be much more comfortable with like a Chris Paul or a Steve Nash with like 32 and 5 assists than like an 18 and 13.
I think that's absolutely
something like
right.
that.
I think that's absolutely right. I think that's right because when you have 18 and 13, what that means is that everybody else is in sync. Guys are scoring more. They're feeling more confident. You know, they're moving the ball better. They're probably getting easier shots rather than consistently asking, you know, someone to make a star player to make terrific shots. And, you know, so I think that in some sense Rose creates a problem there because the defensive system is not designed to counter score-first point guards. I think that this is another reason why, for instance, the Spurs typically play well against the Thunder and have over the last few years, which is that in some ways I think it feeds into Russell Westbrook's worst tendencies
mm-hmm.
as a point guard. Which is that he can – Russell Westbrook can take over games and can score a lot. But what we kind of – what the Spurs kind of nudge him into doing is not so much taking over the game is as ignoring Kevin Durant and James Harden and taking them out of the game and taking Serge Ibaka out of the game. And I think that – but it's not as simple as all that when you play the Bulls.
On a side note, how cool would it be if Ibaka went by like Sergei Ibaka or something cool like that instead of just Serge?
Is it just Serge?
I think it's just Serge.
Oh, I've always said.
Or if it was Sarge.
Sarge
would
like
be wicked.
Sarge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't. You know what? I've probably been mispronouncing that frequently. that's not.
I'm glad I could correct you on that publicly.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I'm sure there is a whole number of athletes out there, NBA and otherwise, whose names I, incorrectly pronounce.
Well,
I mean, honestly, because there's plenty of guys who might come into contact with most frequently in writing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Or if I'm – and there's like plenty of guys where it's like I've watched their games, but I'm always watching them in a bar.
Where you can't hear the commentator.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So I don't hear anyone pronounce their names.
Uh-huh. And even some of them like, – even some of the play-by-play guys differentiate on what they call players from – I mean, even from season to season. I mean, how many times have we changed the pronunciation of Joakim Noah's first name?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, wasn't it like Joakim Noah when he was at Florida and
– Joakim sometimes.
And then it was like Joakim, and then it was Joakim, and I don't know where we're going from.
There's a number of guys who have a different take on that. You know what I mean? And they're, but there's, I don't know, the game last night, though, to return to the Bulls game, I mean, there was a few, for me, I noticed two real things about it, and I think that they're going to be, that they're real problems, which is that one was the defensive boards, which is that we are not a strong enough we're not a strong enough defensive team any longer to allow for as many second attempts as we allowed the Bulls. I think it's important that in order for our defensive efficiency to be high, we have a lot of one and done possessions, and we have a lot of terrific rebounders. And then in some sense, that's something where, for instance, Tim Duncan or DeJuan Blair, when they're on the floor together, they each have their defensive foul. They each have their kind of chinks in the armor defensively nowadays. But one thing that they do well is clean up on the boards. And I think that that's – so it's important that we have one and done. And that wasn't – that struck me as not the case. But also there was a couple of plays out there, both a long stretch at the end of the first quarter and beginning of the second quarter, and then again in the second half, where we had – T.J. Ford, James Anderson, and Tiago Splitter on the floor at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And those three guys, whether because of injury or falling out of the rotation or whatever, hadn't seen a lot of burn on the floor together in recent weeks. And I felt like that was very evident.
You know, one of the things I noticed about Derrick Rose last night that, you know, I think I knew, but I didn't realize it totally, is that he is really, really thick. Like, he's not super tall for, you know, his position. Like, he's probably, you know, 6'1 and a half, 6'2, somewhere in that range. But he is really thick, like, muscular. And, I mean, he's much larger than probably any player at his position who's not, you know, just, like, carrying some extra weight, like an Andre Miller.
Well, the only guy, right, so there's Andre Miller. I mean, you know, Deron Williams is a pretty big point.
That's true. He is big. Yeah.
I tend to think of Deron Williams as being maybe the strongest of the point guards. But Rose is very strong. And I also think that – and like Deron Williams, I think that's very evident when you see him absorb contact and it not really throw off his motion that much.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he finishes after absorbing a good bit of contact.
Yeah.
And he's not – And it's not, you know, he's not, there's a subtle stylistic difference. He's drawing, he draws contact frequently, but he's not trying to draw contact. He's trying to get to the rim and make his move.
Mm-hmm.
It just happens to oftentimes coincide with that, but he's so strong that he kind of does it anyways and like finishes his movement.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, he probably finishes very like probably at a very similar clip to Tony Parker, but they do it in such similar ways. Like Parker he pushes off with like a shoulder and creates space and you know flips the ball up really quick and goes to the floor, whereas Rose kind of pushes into a guy and then hangs and does like the double pump where he's releasing that ball at like the last second before he's gonna get a traveling violation. And it's just it's interesting like the differences in how they do that, and yet they're both so good at finishing with contact.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, because I also think the other thing does that, you know, Tony, the only thing that Rose does that Tony really doesn't do is that Rose is actually, when he goes into a guy, he it's really bumping a guy off.
Yeah.
So he can then swing his, because he has kind of this almost a kind of slingshot motion with his layups where the ball is real tight at his chest and it shoots real quick up around his arm. He doesn't like – but he shoots his whole arm up, like his whole arm swings up. It's not like where Tony kind of – actually his layup motion is kind of short and like kind of curt. It's like he – like the ball just kind of jots like – through everyone's arms and into the air, and you're like, oh my God, we're like, how did the ball fly past everybody?
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know. So he's, yeah, I mean, he's a terrific finisher though, and clearly a terrific player. And I know they're a very good team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they are the second best team in the league behind Miami.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I think the pieces fit really, really well together, and the defense is great. And I think those are two really good things for a team to have.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think the Bulls still do have problems.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they don't. Despite picking up Rip Hamilton and Kyle Korver, I still don't think they have the outside shooting necessary to really take advantage of what Rose creates when he collapses the defense.
Yeah, well, if Deng keeps up like he did last night, they will.
Well, Deng shot very well, and Deng can't. It is, you know, a good shooter, but it's not like. But they really, there is a lot of space on the outside. You know, if Rip hasn't seen a lot of burn because of his injury that he was facing, mm-hmm. if he can get back. I'm interested to see what he can do because what he does very well, what Rip Hamilton does very well that a lot of guys in the Bulls didn't do last year is that he moves terrifically without the ball. And you saw that already in the game last night. When he doesn't have the ball, he's very similar to, say, Ray Allen in this way, in the sense that he's in constant motion, where guy trying to find space to catch and shoot in, where there are guys like, I don't know, Kyle Korver, does a lot of standing around.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But standing around not with – it's not the type of deliberate standing that you have maybe on the Spurs where guys plant themselves in the corner and wait for the play to kind of unfold. It's like he's just kind of hanging out on the perimeter. You know what I mean? Not really – and I – so in general, I'm a little bit of a Kyle Korver hater. I'm out to say it. So,
nice.
Yeah, I tend to think he's not – I'm not that impressed with him, personally.
Fair enough.
So,
hello,
Andrew.
Yeah.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I've got Graydon with me. We are recording
hey,
right now, so welcome
Beautiful.
To the
hey,
Four Graydon. Down Podcast.
Hey, good
thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciate you coming
on. Coming on, man. Yeah.
Wouldn't miss.
How are things up in Dallas this evening? We heard you were up there watching some D-League.
Yeah, a little D-League, a little Texas and the Toros, and it goes overtime.
Fair enough. Who ended up pulling that one out?
Texas wins in OT. Antonio Daniels, 21-11. He's back.
Antonio Daniels.
Oh, Antonio Daniels.
Yeah.
Wow. Yep.
In the D-League. Antonio Daniels.
Second D-League. Year. He was with him last year, and he's just looking to get his way back if he can.
Didn't he spend some time with the Sixers last year?
Yeah, they called him up. They called him up, I want to say it was like in March. And he was supposed to go up in December. He had like some offers, and he hurt his wrist, and they all backed off. So we'll see if someone needs a veteran. Don't know. He's in shape, that's for sure.
He looked in shape?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Andrew, before you came on, we were talking. We were singing the praises of Derrick Rose. It was really one of the first looks I really got at him. I was at the game last year when the Bulls were in town, but yeah, that was the day of the whole Tony Parker fiasco. So there was kind of a lot going on. But I was asking you, what were your thoughts of Derrick Rose last night? I mean, you were pretty up close and personal. I mean, that guy is he's a beast for a little point guard, isn't he?
He is. He's stronger than I remember. He flat out finishes, and he is cold blooded. I kept thinking out of every timeout he had the ball in his hands, and when they needed a bucket, he wanted the basketball. I was impressed. I wish I could see him more. That's how impressed I was with him.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, he has that you know, he wants the ball, but at the same time, he's not afraid to give it up. Like, he seemed to have no problem with giving up the ball when it wasn't going to lead directly to an assist, when it was going to lead to one pass to another, and then a bucket.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really good.
He's got a feel for that offense, doesn't
he? Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's what I noticed, and I think that's it. He knows, you know what, this is the right guy with the ball, and I just, I'll tell you what, it's scary that he's this young and this good, because the comparison that I would think, honestly, because I just heard this the other day, Kevin Durant made a comment about how he's figuring out how to score easier. If Derrick Rose does that too, those two become unstoppable, don't they?
Yeah.
Man.
Oh, I think that's absolutely right. I think the funny thing about – I think Kevin Durant and Derrick Rose are very similar. I mean, they're obviously very different in some very clear ways. But they're similar in the sense that despite all the fantastic things they do and the amazing plays they make, there's some clear areas where they can improve. And there's areas – they're pretty palpable ways in which they could get better. And the thought of them already being this good and yet having room to grow is a pretty shocking notion, you know, whether it's, you know, Durant's ability to, you know, move and create space off the ball so as to receive the pass and not get blocked out of the play, or it's, you know, Rose continuing to work on his outside shooting, or possibly some of his passing after managing to collapse the defense, or a number of things. You know, there's simple things, realistic things they could do that would make them such dominant players, more dominant than they already are. So
ready for the scary part? They're going to outwork you, so they will get better. That's what's frightening for everybody else. Just when you think you have them figured out, they are going to add something else to their game because they are not afraid to work, and they're not afraid to work on their weaknesses. That's what I've always admired about Kevin Durant, that's for sure.
Well, I've also loved this, you know, something we've seen in Kevin Durant over this last year, where for a long time Kevin Durant kind of got pegged as this nice guy kind of player, where, you know, and he is a nice guy. He's a nice young man, and I think he's a very honorable guy off the floor and you know and whatnot. However, there was at the end of the Western Conference Finals last year when people were asking about whether he was happy for Dirk and things like that, and he kind of bit back and the fangs came out a little bit, and he kind of was like, no, I'm not happy. You know, I want to have won. Now, I wanted to win. And that's come out a few times this year as well. And if anything, I've kind of liked that. I've liked the fact that you've started to see, you know, the notion that, you know, when you see that competitiveness come out, you know, I don't think it undermines the fact that he's still a very classy guy. I think what it's betraying is the fact that this guy is actually very dedicated to being a tremendous success in this league.
I agree. He wants to win. Yeah.
Yeah, and that drive is dangerous. Is dangerous. So, you know, yeah.
You're exactly right. That drive is the reason why somewhere down the line someone's going to be asking, "Are you happy for Kevin Durant?" That's why
right,
I'm with you. You can be, you can be a nice guy, but once you get between those lines, you're supposed to play to win. That's you're supposed to, and that's Durant, and he's learning, and he knows he's got something special there. In Oklahoma City, and he knows. The other thing is, he's accepted being the leader. A lot of quote-unquote superstars, they like the label, but they don't like the responsibility. I think Kevin Durant has always been a winner, no matter where he has been, but I think he also likes the responsibility of being a superstar also.
Hmm. Well, bringing it back to the Spurs, Andrew, where were you thinking the Spurs were going to be positioned coming into this season? How did you feel their prospects were coming in?
Coming into the season, I liked their position because they had a ton of guys coming back. And mm-hmm. my belief was the more guys that you had that were coming back, and I'll use the Spurs phrase, but I mean it for any team. If you had corporate knowledge coming back, I think you were ahead of the game when it came to this compressed schedule. So, with the Spurs bringing the big three back and Gary Neal coming back and DeJuan Blair in a second year for Tiago Splitter, even James Anderson, with these guys coming back because they knew one another, they weren't going to need the long training camp to get to know one another. It wasn't going to be a new offense that was going to have to be put in and learned quickly and then learned even more over the course of the season. So I like where they were. I thought veteran teams had the advantage coming in, as opposed to I thought the Clippers might struggle because it was new. Minnesota, because Rick Adelman was going to give them a different identity than what they had under Rambis. Houston has surprised me. Same thing with McHale. Just because of the new pieces, there wasn't enough of a training camp to get to know it, and you were going to have to do a lot of this on the fly. That's what I thought. That's where I thought veteran teams were going to have the advantage. Plus, veteran guys, I think, for the most part, and there are exceptions, veteran guys knew what to do over the lockout to stay in shape, so when they did report, they weren't going to be using that training camp time to get back into shape. They were already going to be there.
Now, having said all that, did you think they would be doing this well at this point?
No. You know why I say no? If you had talked to me January 3rd after the Manu Ginobili injury, we had a conference call before our next Spurs telecast, and we went through the schedule, and we were hoping they would be at 500. They exceeded that because the young guys, I mean, they were outstanding. The youngins, as Sean Elliott calls them, who knew Danny Green was going to explode like this? The thought during media day with Gary Neal was he was going to be in other teams' scouting reports now, that they were going to try to stop him. And they came through, those two came through in spades. This was the Thiago that, had he been healthy, we might have seen last year. But you can see that he's added to his game. But, no, I'm telling you, after the injury to Manu in Minnesota, we're thinking, holy moly, what the heck? And then TJ goes down a week later in Milwaukee, and there's no backup point guard. And you're thinking, man, this just got harder. But they have found a way. Tony elevated to a play. And, you know, working with Danny Ferrian, we asked him flat out, is this the best you've seen Tony play? And he said, absolutely. He's gone to another level. MVP consideration level. I don't think he wins it just because of the way the media is set up. But the way he carried this team, and really in the past, sometimes Tony would score to the detriment of not getting everyone else involved. I think he's mixed it in beautifully, and we've seen glimpses of Tim Duncan that, you know, this isn't going to be the end for Tim, and he's not going to just ride off into the sunset at the end of this contract. There's that will to win from Tim, and they're just getting so much support from that bench that, no, I didn't think they'd be in this position at this time of the year, not with Manu going down when he did in January.
Wait, so you think you at the end there, you almost kind of buried the lead there a bit, Andrew. You were saying that at the very end there you mentioned that you don't think that Tim Duncan's going to ride it off into the sunset at the end of this contract. You do believe that he will re-sign with San Antonio after this year and hang around and keep working and keep fighting and keep trying to win games.
I do. I think he likes this group around him. And I'm just speaking for myself. I just
think he likes this group around.
I honestly do. This isn't the rocking chair ceremony that we saw from Dr. J and we saw with Kareem. It's not that way at all. And we're spoiled because we get to see him game in, game out. But I think with the rest of the country, while they can easily label Tim boring, I don't think they give him enough credit for being as smart as he is. Mm-hmm. Not just intelligence, the basketball intelligence, but I don't think they have ever given him that competitive fire. It has burned for a long time. And what we were saying about Derrick Rose and Kevin Durant about working, this is Tim Duncan, who has worked on his body each of the last three off seasons. He's put on weight. He's taken off weight. He's tried a number of different things. So, you know, this is not a guy who's, you know, just saying, okay, my deal is done. That's going to be it. I've always, always admired that competitive fire. Manu, more of the heart and soul, you know, the emotions on the sleeve, that kind of guy. But Timmy, boy, I'll tell you what, game on the line. You know he wants the ball. You know he wants to win and will do what it takes if it means staying hours after practice. Heck, Pops had to throw him off the floor this year because he wanted him to get rest. I've never thought that Tim Duncan's gotten enough credit for that competitive edge that other quote-unquote superstars have gotten.
Yeah, it's interesting. Bill Simmons has mentioned this a couple times in the past week, and that he thought that like you said, Duncan's intelligence, he thinks that the level of play Duncan has now, while not near what he was at his peak, is sustainable just because he's kind of figured out how to play without whatever athleticism he had and just use his smarts and his skills. And even Steve Kerr was on Simmons' podcast last week and talked about how Duncan, like you said, he had that competitive fire and that he likes basketball. He's not one of those tall guys who got into basketball because he was tall. He got into basketball because he actually enjoyed the game, and that's keeping him around, and that will probably keep him around longer, which is interesting.
That's
a great point. I think he could stick around for 3 or 4 more years. I think a lot of us were thinking if he wasn't going to retire after this year, maybe 2 more years at the most, but I mean, maybe he could play 4 more years.
Yeah, I don't know what it's going to be. I truly believe when he decides, that's going to be it. I don't think there's going to be people, to talk him out of it. He's going to decide what he decides. But I think because he has help, because he has a good team, because they are a contender, I think that's what makes it so fun. If this team were torn apart and there was nobody left, it was just him, I think that would bother the heck out of him. And maybe he says, okay, that's it. But I think because, what if Manu on his side and he doesn't have to play against him because, Tony, and because these young guys have stepped up, because that, he does have that chance to win. I do believe that fire still burns for him.
I think that's absolutely right. And I really appreciate the fact that you've made that point as there's nothing there's nothing wrong in people saying, listen, Tony tends to be a slightly more stoic guy when he's out there on the floor. He clearly isn't, the most animated guy out there, but people who misinterpret that as a lack of will to win are just, it's patently absurd. Nobody who wins 4 titles, never in the history of the NBA has somebody been so talented that they could not have that fire and waltz their way to a championship, much less many. I really appreciate you making that point. I couldn't agree with you more. So
yeah, I'm with you. If there wasn't that passion, I'm not sure it would work on this team. Every coach is going to be successful when the superstar buys in. Now, when they're both on the same page and they both want to win, that's huge, and it's happened. The superstar doesn't buy in, it's not going to work because players are going to follow the superstar. I mean, you replace the coach, But
right.
Tim bought in. Tim had, David, and then David deferred to Tim because he saw how good he was, and then that's where the winning began. But, yeah, look, we're so quick to label when it comes to sports media. We're so quick to say that team is dead, and then we're surprised that after 5 games, this team wins the championship, whether it's in football. We're so quick to lay that label on everybody. Look, Tim's been labeled. That's the way it is. But you know what? That label's going to change. The farther we get removed from him, it's going to be – I think he is more like the modern-day Bill Russell is what Tim Duncan is. And you know how Russell is revered in NBA circles. Unfortunately, he's not getting what it is now because he doesn't have the sizzle of everybody else. He's not playing in New York or Boston or L.A. But I think what you were saying, I think there is that appreciation. Definitely basketball fans know it. Basketball people know it. And obviously the titles will do that and 3 MVPs. But I think he's a guy who's going to be appreciated more and more and more. Unfortunately, the farther away he is from the game because he's doing things that this league hasn't seen. Automatic Hall of Famer. When he does decide to retire, just take the jersey off then and put it in the raft. I mean, this is a guy who he may not have the most points or the most rebounds or the most assists or the most blocks, but darn it, that name's going to be littered on all of those lists.
I think that's absolutely right. It's funny that you mentioned Bill Russell as there's as I believe that actually Bill Russell claims that in the contemporary NBA, Tim Duncan is his favorite player, as he is the player whom he feels emulates his style and his sense of values the most. I believe he said that in an interview once. I've maybe heard him say that a few times. So the comparison isn't you know, is certainly valid. As far as Tim Duncan's stature is concerned and the way his stature will grow, you know what? A guy who made a comment once that always made made a real impression upon me, because the fact that he would even choose to compare him to himself struck me so much, is there was an interview with Shaquille O'Neal once where Shaquille O'Neal was talking about how he was kind of this – it was late in his career, and he was being very kind of self-congratulatory and bombastic and talking about what a great player he was and how dominant he had been and how he was now kind of this godfather figure to the NBA and how he kind of was a mentor to guys across the league. And somebody asked him, you know, is there anyone else like you? And he was like, well, the only guy who could be like me if he wanted to be is Tim Duncan, which – the fact that Shaquille is not one to favorably compare anyone else to himself. So the fact that he chose to do that with Tim Duncan struck me as, you know, significant, I think. You know what I mean? So, you know.
Yeah, I think Shaq appreciated that Tim's level has been so high for so long, where that wasn't the case for Shaq. I thought Shaq was on fumes at the end. He got heavier and wasn't the same player. There were glimpses. But Shaq never had the complete game that Tim Duncan has. Look, Shaq became a better passer, but he's not the passer of Tim Duncan. Shaq never developed an outside game. Tim Duncan can kill you. You want to take away the inside to Tim, he'll hurt you from 15, 16, 17 feet. Tim Duncan's a more complete player. I know the builds are different. Shaq could be flat-out dominating, but I never thought that Shaquille was as complete, because Shaq was a center and there is a dearth of centers. I think that's what kept Shaq at the forefront. Meanwhile, Tim's going up against every great power forward in the last 15, 16 years, and he's still been at the top of that game. But you're right, for Shaq to say that, that was a little bit of maturity in Shaq, and Lord knows we don't see enough of that.
Right. To see Shaq kind of make such a gesture, it's not an everyday gesture on his part. You know Tim must have made an impact in order for him to – it's not only that Duncan's gone up against the great power forwards, but, I mean, basically all the great big men, because Shaq used to cover him at times, you know, and now last night, you know, even in the Bulls game, not just – you know, Joakim Noah is not a great center, but he's one of the he's in the upper echelon of defensive centers currently in the league, you know, and he's the guy who they're sticking on Tim. So year in, year out, I mean, he's basically Duncan's having to do what he's doing against the best big they can throw at him.
Yeah, and we really should say big, because it is that combination. He'll guard the power forward, and he will guard the center. I remember a couple years ago watching Dwight Howard, and it was a couple years ago, so Dwight didn't have as much to his game, but in the first half, Dwight was catching and scoring with relative ease. And as you watch the game go on, you could see Tim would move Dwight just a couple of feet, 2 to 3 to 4 feet from where Dwight wanted to catch the ball, and you could see Dwight's head spinning along, you know what, I'm not as comfortable catching it. Tim would get to the spot first and move Dwight where it was either a different angle or he caught the ball farther away from the basket, and it changed Dwight Howard. Those are just the simple things that Tim Duncan does. Look, he may not have the same explosiveness, but you know what? 15 years in the NBA, he's got that brain moving. If he's not going to out-physical you, and he can still do that from night to night, he's definitely going to outthink you.
But the other thing is he doesn't – you know, one thing that he's always been – when you mention his ability to move Dwight, absolutely a big percentage of that is his savvy and his intelligence. And obviously people, whether they are everybody seems to recognize that intelligence. But the other thing there is one thing that's even as his quickness has declined and his lateral quickness has declined over the years, he is actually – I would say one of his most underappreciated characteristics is his physical strength.
Mm-hmm.
There were guys used to talk about that a lot. I remember there was an interview, you know, probably in SI, maybe 2003, 2004, with Tracy McGrady, Tim Duncan, and Kevin Garnett, and they all sat them down and they were talking to them about the NBA. And they asked Garnett, you know, who is the guy whom you least like guarding? And he turned to his left and he was like, I don't like guarding Tim. And they were like, why? You know, why Tim? Why not Shaq? Why not whomever? And he was like, you don't understand. Tim Duncan is the strongest man I've ever had to cover in my life. He's like a tree trunk. It's unbelievable. And I think that always stuck with me since then. And I think you can see it when you're looking for it. People don't ever talk about him as like a really strong player, partially because he doesn't have that hyper cut, kind of hyper muscular build. But it doesn't mean that he's not an absolute brick wall.
There's never been a case of being out of shape. And I think the other thing is, yes, you know, when you say signature move, Tim Duncan bank shot, right? And not still, it's like the sky hook by Kareem. Why don't more guys do it? But Tim has also learned to go to the other hand. You're not going to get the same spin move every time from Tim. He has adapted through his 15 years. So just when you think you have him figured out, all of a sudden now, guess what? He's going to go to his left across the lane and score with the left hand. Or he's going to, you know, pull a spin move. He keeps adapting. It's not the same game. And it's like, okay, everybody caught up to me. You learn from day one in this league. You've got to add something to your game every year. And even someone as great as Tim Duncan still does that year in and year out.
So, Andrew, what is your feeling for the rest of the season? I mean, how do you think the Spurs are legit Western Conference Finals contenders? I mean, can they make the NBA Finals?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes. I think where the league is right now with Oklahoma City and San Antonio 1 and 2, I think they're the two best in the West. And until someone proves me wrong, I'm going to stay with that. Here's my thought. I kind of hope I am wrong in this. I think now some of these teams are going to the tumblers are going to all come together. I think there are some teams that are going to improve because they've had that first half together. I honestly thought Houston would struggle more in the first half and be that tough out in the second half. They've played better than I thought, and they are difficult, that's for sure. Minnesota was a team I thought would be better in the second half. I hope I'm wrong there because the Spurs still have to play them twice. But I'm not seeing, you know, I'm still seeing the Clippers do Clipper-like things. I'm still seeing, you know, Memphis, they're not as deep as they were. The longer that series went last year, I always thought it was the O.J. Mayos and the Darrell Arthurs and the Gravis Vasquezes that got confidence as that series went. I don't see that out of Memphis this year. So that's why I'm saying right now I think Oklahoma and San Antonio are the two best teams in the West. I think there will be contenders because the West is always deep. But as for contenders, I like the way the Spurs are built along the lines of that depth and the managing of the minutes plus that depth and not just putting bodies out there but guys who can contribute. Danny Green's been a revelation. Gary Neal in his second season has been as good. Tiago, you know, I'm saying the same names, but they're all contributing. That second unit I think is as good or better than other teams' second units, and that's where I think the Spurs can win some games in this second half.
So where do you think they really need to improve on? I mean, what's the glaring weakness? I assume you're going to say defensively, but where specifically?
You know, I think they're always going to keep looking for another big. I really do. I mean, we've seen, you know, from Malcolm Thomas and Ike Diago and Eric Dawson was there because they had to bring him up with Diago down. I think they're constantly going to look for that other big to make them deeper in that front court. I really think the lack of practice time is what's hurting on the defensive end. So when they've had some time, I mean, you have to do it on the fly and do it in a game. And really, there's a lot of responsibility on the defense in my understanding, and it's where it has to be. It's not so much the one-on-one defense, but you're going to see a lot of guys talking to one another and where they're supposed to be. But without that practice time, it's going to be hard. Although, in fairness, March is a little bit easier than, you know, February was wall-to-wall. January was incredible. So they may have a little bit of time and just, I think, that knowledge. But I still wonder with the big, and I can't help but think, guys, that I really would like to see this team fully healthy. They really haven't been from Gary Neal in the beginning to Manu and TJ and then Tiago and Kawhi and Gary getting dinged up at the end of that rodeo road trip. I want to see what they can do completely healthy, because I think that's where, again, whatever Pop's starting five will be and whatever his next five will be, I still say I love what that first five can do, but it's that second five that has helped turn the tide in a couple of games, and I just think these young guys have gotten such confidence. Go back to the Dallas game. They got such confidence because Pop said, you know what, you're staying out there, you're going to play. Even the Portland loss, they got to do some things. It's what Danny Ferry was saying. They got to do some things they didn't normally do. Kawhi Leonard could score more. You had someone handling the basketball more. They were able to do some things, and it was the old, hey, you know what, this is on you guys. I think once they have that trust, once these games start getting more important and we get into playoff time, I think those guys are going to be ready.
Speaking of that Portland game, when you found out what the lineup was going to be, because you were calling that game, what was your thought of having to call that game?
Danny, are you ready? We might have some time to fill. Look, the one thing we never thought, though, we didn't think Portland was going to shoot lights out from beyond the arc in that first quarter.
Yeah.
I mean, it got away. I'm not going to make an excuse. Obviously, it was shorthanded. My first thought was, you know what? Pop knows his team better than anybody else. And I think it was a great move. Because everybody wants the minutes to be limited, but not this game. You know what I mean? It's like, it's going to have to happen sometimes, gang. It's like when Timmy sat out in Houston. Well, how can he sit out against the Rockets? Got to win that game. Well, you know what? You don't. And that's the thing. And if it's a regular season and not a compressed season, then we all know that Pop uses November and December to lead up and get better. And that was a case of, you know what? I think if the L.A. game wasn't so physical, if that Utah game wasn't so physical, they may have played against Portland. But I don't think it was a matter of let's get an undefeated rodeo road trip. That wasn't the thought. Was that team playing better basketball at the end of the trip than they were at the beginning? That's what's important to Pop. And now they need to continue to get better from there. That's the beauty. And I really like that against Denver, they had the mentality of an absolute professional. Let's finish this with a win. Let's do this. 7-1 is nice. 8-1 is even better. And I like the way they took care of Denver. But no, going into that Portland game, it's like, oh, Danny, I hope you have a lot of material because we're going to be talking about a lot of things tonight.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Graydon, do you have anything else for Andrew?
Well, I mean, do we need to? We probably, you know, just because he's a first time guest doesn't mean that he's exempt from the standard line of questioning.
That's true.
Oh, well, okay. Oh. Now I'm getting a little nervous.
We have to ask.
We did our podcast on a weekly basis during the lockout, and we were running out of things to talk about come late November and in December. And so there was two questions we were asking people. One of those questions isn't really relevant anymore, but the other is. Grin, you take it away.
Andrew, do you have any nicknames? And if you do, what is the origin of said nickname?
Family nickname given by my oldest brother, because I am the fifth of six, was Ange, A-N-G-E. Unfortunately, the other nickname that I had, which was also my two older brothers' nicknames, but I don't like saying it in San Antonio because the connotation is terrible, but it was Moco, M-O-C-O. So you take the enemy, Moco. And once I learned from a Spanish friend of mine that meant mucus, I was like, ooh, I don't know how to So I would say those would be the two.
Okay.
That's good. Okay. That's a good start.
I like that. Yeah. Good, solid. I like that. Good answer. Good answer. Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't think I have much more unless you do. I mean, I just thanks so much, Andrew, for coming on. We really appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Andrew, we really appreciate your time tonight.
You guys do a great job. I appreciate you having me. Keep doing it. You got to know the guys up here at Fox. They know all about your site. Even the guys who don't do Spurs, the producers up here, they're reading it also. They want to learn as much as they can about the Spurs. So it's definitely something that I wanted to lead them to, let them read, and they have told me time and again they enjoy it as well.
Awesome, very cool.
Thanks so much. Appreciate that.
Well, thanks a lot, Andrew, and we'll see you. I'll see you around the AT&T Center.
You got it. Thanks again.
All right. Hey. See ya.
See ya.